Podcastle, episode number 559 for January 29th, 2019. Dying Lessons by Troy L. Wiggins. Rated R. Salam, good people, and welcome to Podcastle. Shh, Blaze, please be patient. Please excuse our resident dragon. He's a bit anxious today. So am I, for that matter. Let's see. Where was I? Oh, yes. This is Khalida Muhammad Ali, your host for today's episode and co-editor of Podcastle. All right. Would you just be patient? I'm going to tell them. Over there, Blaze, sit down and don't touch anything until it's time to go. I swear, this dragon is so antsy today. Well, I may as well get to it, because if I don't, surely Blaze is going to start blubbering into the mic or set something on fire or something. You see, there is a reason I'm hosting today, besides the fact that I freaking love this story. It's because I wanted to personally say my goodbyes to all of you. I've been co-editor here at Podcastle for 2 years now, and it's been an amazing time. I've gotten to work with the most brilliant and intuitive crew of first readers, and I have made a true heart-deep connection with the very best partners a person could ever have, co-editor Jen Albert and assistant editor and host extraordinaire Setsu Uzume. I am a better editor and human being because of their unending patience and generosity. Jen, Setsu, there is no way for me to tell you how much I'm going to miss you because there are simply no fitting words. Thank you for everything. I adore you two phenomenal humans. And, not to be forgotten, I've gotten pretty tight with the very best dragon ever to roar or climb onto furniture when he knows he's not supposed to, or set curtains on fire in the entire world, which is part of the reason that I'm leaving Podcastle. I've got some fires of my own to light, but enough about me. Podcastle is very proud to present Dying Lessons by Troy L. Wiggins. Troy L. Wiggins is a writer and editor from Memphis, Tennessee. His short fiction has appeared in The Griots, Sister of the Spear, Long Hidden, Speculative Fiction from the Margins of History, and Memphis Noir Anthologies, and has appeared or is forthcoming in Expanded Horizons, Fireside, Uncanny, and Beneath Ceaseless Skies. His essays and criticisms have appeared in the Memphis Flyer, Literary Orphans Magazine, People of Color Destroy Science Fiction, Strange Horizons, Pen America, and on Tor.com. Troy is co-editor of Fire Magazine of Black Speculative Fiction, and he blogs, rather infrequently, about writing, nerd culture, and race at AfroFantasy.net. Troy lives in Memphis with his wife, Kimberly, and their two dogs. Follow him on Twitter at Troy L. Wiggins. Today's narrator is Dominic Rabrin. Dominic Rabrin is an artist living in the United States. He is the creator of Dom's Sketchcast, a show that runs on YouTube. DSC features interviews with creative individuals, animations, and other experimental art videos at youtube.com/generaldom. And you can follow him on Twitter at Count Blackula. Now for our story. Keep your eyes open or you'll miss it.
Dying Lessons by Troy L. Wiggins. Read by Dominic Rabrin. I learned how to bend light from my mother. Nights after I came home from math and Spanish tutoring were spent in our backyard, deep in the trees where no one would catch me learning the basics of refraction, drilling the slight movements that would keep me from moving too much air, or creating too large a shadow and revealing myself. "This is a last line of defense," she would say, telling me over and over again like I wasn't listening, which I usually wasn't because I'd rather be in the house playing Final Fantasy or something. Mama didn't care and would talk right through my distraction. "The number one thing to do in any situation is figure out a way to calm things down before you have to blink out." "Why not just blink out before anything happened?" Mama was a teacher through and through, and she'd never lose patience with me or breathe hard when I asked a question. Instead, she would smooth back her black crinkly hair or smirk like she knew all the secrets of the world and didn't feel like telling me. Then she'd bop my nose or pull my ear. "You can't let them know everything, baby. If they know everything, they'll definitely use everything they know against you." I learned how to spin shadows from my father. Back before the bus company laid him off and he had to pick up an overnight job, we'd go on fishing trips in the early morning. In the dark space before dawn, he'd show me a different way to disappear. "You can't yank on the shadow like it's an ornery dog on a leash," he'd say. My daddy was so black that only his teeth and eyes were visible in the dark morning, even without the shadows bubbling around him. "You gotta caress it, you gotta love on it, and convince it to help you out. Tell it all you need and all you're scared of. That's the only way it'll come." "Why do I need the shadow when I can bend light to where nobody can see me?" I'd ask. Sometimes this would make my father angry, and he'd suck his teeth or skeet a jet of watery saliva into the brush. Other times, he'd rub my near-bald head and look off at the rising sun. "Use your head, boy, use your head. You groan in the eyes of the world now. It's people out there just looking for a reason to take your ass out. And you better be ready for them. This shit's real. You hear me?" I would nod. Daddy was good for going off on you when you hadn't done anything wrong. "You don't always want to be invisible," he'd say, trying to smooth things over. "Sometimes, you gotta let a motherfucker know that you right there on their ass. Right there in their shit. Ain't nothing they can do about it because you armed with the same darkness they've been using to hurt you." "And never use them at the same time," they'd warn. "Your heart can't take it, and you'll burn up from the inside out. One at a time, you hear?" "Yes, ma'am," I'd say. "Yes, sir." I learned how to use a knife on a hot, wet Thursday night. It had started out as a gray Thursday morning. School was out due to civil unrest. A wave of people, black, brown, and white, stomping around in every major city across the country, chanting and blocking bridges, and sometimes they were fighting with the police. Fighting the police. Because school was out, Mama had to stay home too. We watched the news report in the living room together in the morning before Daddy was supposed to head out to work. I was bundled up on the couch with my head on my mama's lap. Daddy was sitting in his big brown recliner, slurping black coffee out of a steel cup and frowning at the TV screen. "And in national news, riots and tensions are still high across the country as protesters in various states disrupt major highways and occupy various government buildings in response to what they call a failure to act on the part of various political and court officials. They allege that federal law enforcement and juries intentionally refuse to indict or even detain suspects in a string of possible race-related killings from Michigan to Kentucky." The man reporting the news looked straight from a comic book. He had a square jaw and had a curl at the front of his hair like Superman, but his blue eyes were flat and his teeth were kind of yellow. I didn't trust him. "So far, neither law enforcement officials or the office of the president have made a statement. The National Guard is on alert. We'll have more on this ongoing situation, so stay tuned." "To goddamn shame what they did to them kids," Daddy said, and his voice was quiet, but he shook when he spoke. As he was talking, he blew a gob of spit out of his mouth, and it landed on the knee of his blue work pants. He didn't wipe it off, and it just sat there. I watched it until his pants absorbed it, because that was easier than looking at him be angry at the world, and angry at himself for not being able to do much about it. I'm a call in today. How the hell is it right that folks, police and all, can just run up on black and brown kids and just kill them for fun? It ain't right. It ain't fair. You'd think they'd get sick of having their foot on our necks, Mama said. She stroked my head like she was afraid that I was going to disappear. Her fingertips trembled against my scalp. I feel like we should be doing more than just taking off work. I'm going to make some phone calls, check Facebook. There might be some organized action today, a protest or something. My bones are burning. We need to do something. How long is it before we go out next? I sat up, shocked to hear Mama talking like that. She never usually allowed herself to give in to fear. Daddy was good for exploding on people, but I knew that deep down, Daddy was so angry because he was so scared. Scared for us. Scared of the world. Everyone who knew us knew that if they should be afraid of anyone, it was Mama. She didn't play, because she wasn't scared of anything. Now was different. Daddy downed his coffee and sat the bowl on the arm of the recliner. The time for that protest and then singing We Shall Overcome was over with when they shot Martin Luther King, baby. I mean, yeah, get you some people together and make a hashtag, but I'ma pull something together too. Come on, boy. Tell me you're not going into that closet, Mama sighed. But Daddy was already up out of his seat, trembling and tense. He led me down our house's single long hallway, his work shirt bunched up between his shoulder blades. His work boots scuffed the naked wood floor. We stopped in front of the hall closet where Mama kept the towels. Stand back, son, he said, opening the door and reaching in. I already knew what he was going to pull out of there. A steel lockbox that held his fishing knives. And something else. Something that I wasn't allowed to see. The box was so rusty that it looked like it had been used back during slavery times. He turned the key in the box and it opened with a click and a whine. The time for fucking around is over, he said more to himself than to me, pulling out a long, hard something wrapped in a white towel. He lifted the towel like he was uncovering a baby, and all the light seemed to disappear from the room and leapt right into the inky black of my daddy's gun. But when I looked at him, he wasn't spinning any shadows. My head swam. This is old shit. We wasn't ever supposed to live this long, he muttered. I don't think he even remembered I was in the hallway with him. Now let's see somebody try to start some shit around here. Five pops split the morning, jarring us all. If we'd been glass, we would have been shattered into a million pieces. Daddy held up a hand as if he was mentally willing me to stay still while he ran to the window. My mama came running down the hallway, and I was close behind her. A caravan of trucks rumbled down the street in front of our house, each one carrying men wearing body armor and armed with enormous guns that sucked all of the little joy we had left right out of us. Somebody was talking over loudspeakers, but all I saw was men jumping off the back of the trucks, looking like soldiers with bulletproof vests and red bandanas tied around the bottom half of their faces. Time moved like it was stuck in syrup. The men split into groups and stalked up to different houses, all of them built the same. Two doors with one long hallway down the middle of the house connecting them. Some folks opened their doors willingly. Others got their door kicked in. And whether they were welcome or they invaded, the men lit the houses up with flashes from the guns' hot mouths. One group stopped at the house of our next-door neighbor, Vanity. Before they could get too close, she came running at them, her hair wrapped in a pink satin cap and her feet in those slippers that you can get for a handful of change from the beauty supply store. She flailed a cast-iron skillet full of hot grease directly into the eyes of two of those dudes, and they crumpled into a ball like scalded roaches. She grabbed up her kids and tried to run, but there were three of them, too many for her to handle on her own. The remaining men took out her knees first. By the time most of the soldiers gathered up, we could hear her screaming from up under, scuffling and wet thwacking noises. Mama and Daddy had bundled me up in one of Grandma's old scratchy electric blankets and pushed me out into the backyard. My pockets had somehow gotten full of $20 bills that they'd pulled from under the mattress. That was always Mama's trick, filling pockets when you weren't looking. She shoved something hard and smooth into my hand and yelled, "Run, goddammit, run!" Mama never cursed. My legs wouldn't listen to me. Mama put a finger up to her lips and faded out of sight. Two men crashed out of the back door, guns in hand. Someone shoved me, sent me stumbling. The killers saw me, advanced. There was a sound like an axe hitting a tree, and one of them fell forward. An axe buried in his head. The other turned, and I felt Mama's hand on my collar, dragging me. The gunshot sounded like rapid-fire slaps. They kicked up big chunks of the backyard. Something leaned against my back, slumped over on me. Blood splattered across my shirt. Mama's arms fizzled back into view across my shoulders, covered in blood from elbow to fingertips. I fell under her. She tucked me into her when she hit the ground, covering me. One word hissed from her throat. "Hide!" Six huge blasts, like cannons, burst from our house so loud that the sky cleared and a bit of sun peeked through the gray. A guy crashed out of our side window and laid there, staring at the sky with blood pumping from a hole in his neck. Daddy stumbled to the back door, and his eyes were full of rage when he saw the dead gunman, the living one, and Mama laying on the ground with a bloody crown around her head. He screamed and flooded the entire backyard with shadows. I couldn't see the house, or even the sky anymore, but I could hear my daddy roaring. Another series of slaps, and everything went silent, but the day was still black as midnight. Darkness pressed up against my skin, squeezing me, trying to hold me in place. I blinked and was gone. My town is in low country. A river runs through hills to the west of us. That river floods like the Nile, making the fields around our house a swamp one half of the year and a rainforest for the other. Tonight it was a rainforest, but the skies were clear and the stars bright. An urgent kind of laughter buzzed in my chest. Some of the men who had been killing people in towns like mine had made a barrel fire in the lot of an abandoned church, and it was visible for miles. I crept up as close as I dared, close enough to smell the blood and gunpowder on their body armor. I pulled up a little bit of darkness, just enough to make the night that had settled on my shoulders thicker. "I got me about three niggers today," I overheard the nearest one to me say. "They're animals. One of them had like four grown-ass sons just sitting up on the couch playing video games when we bust in, collecting all the welfare checks. Should have seen the looks on their faces when I bust in hot. Good goddamn night."
"I got me an old one,"
another soldier bragged. This one was young, with square glasses. He looked like he'd teach English at my high school, right alongside Mama.
"Yep, I put two right in the back of her nappy-ass head. Her husband did some weird shit where he made the whole yard dark, but I got his ass too. Got pictures of him on my iPhone. You want to see that shit?"
"Hell yeah. I got video of us getting the one that threw grease on Bradley and Witten."
"No shit? I was wondering who took off the hood rat."
"Yeah, man. By the time we finished with her, there wasn't enough left to fit in an icebox.
Sweet. You know that we've got the bomb drones on order, right? Wait until those come in. That's where shit will get fun.
My eyes burned wet, but my guts had frozen over. I fumbled around in my pocket. Mama had given me one of Daddy's old fishing jackknives, the blade black with jagged silver teeth that glittered in the starlight. Holding that blade right then, my tears dried up and cold darkness crept into my bones, smothered all of the trauma, the rage, the deep loss that was inside me. There was a near silent click as I slid the blade into ready position. Shadows bubbled around me, seemingly boiling up from the moist earth. My blade was ready, and my parents' names were heavy on my lips. I blinked out.
And welcome back. This story is an emotional one, and it shows us the desperate lengths one may go to in order to maintain one's humanity and dignity in a world that doesn't wish one to have it. It also shows the lengths the powerful will go to in order to maintain said power. What I find even more interesting, in that it parallels real life, is that often the power that one has seems to crowd out one's empathy. Hit the forums and tell us your thoughts. Okay, almost finished, Blaze. Just a couple more minutes, okay? Well, that's our show for this week. And my last official show as co-editor of Podcastle. On behalf of everyone here at Podcastle, our audio engineer, Peter Beveresh, the very best audio engineer, our forum moderator, Asakat, assistant editor Setsu Uzume, co-editor Jen Albert, myself, along with associate editors Aiden Doyle, Ace Radcliffe, Arun Jiwa, Devin Martin, Ebony Dunmar, Eleanor Wood, Alora Gatz, Hamilton Perez, Julia Pratt, Julian Jarboe, Crystal Claxton, Matt Dovey, Orion Rodriguez, and Asakat. Be sure to share Podcastle with your friends. Hit us up on social media, and if you would like to show some extra love, head to patreon.com/EAPodcasts for special events, bonus episodes, and Podcastle appearances in the wild. Podcastle will be back next week with another story. Until then, this is Khalida Muhammad Ali signing off with a quote from Anne Frank. I know what I want. I have a goal, an opinion. I have a religion and love. Let me be myself, and then I am satisfied. I know that I am a woman with inward strength and plenty of courage. Okay, Blaze, let's go.
Jen, I don't want her to go.
Neither do I. But come on, Setsu, we talked about this. Blaze is all saddled and ready for you, Khalida.
It's happening again.
Get the reins. Keep Blaze steady.
The path between worlds is opening.
Someone's coming through. Who? Sheree Clark?
The Sheree Clark?
Hey, guys. Did you, lose something?
The ramparts, the garden, the dragon. We're back.
Peter, you're back. You found him.
We're all here. No more phasing.
How is this possible? The way reality was tearing.
The instabilities will always be there. The trick is knowing when to fight the flow and when to ride it out. This old castle is tough, but you've got to fly smart, too.
It was incredible. We flashed through 6 worlds and didn't feel a thing.
Well, I'm so glad you're both here. We were just wishing Khalida bon voyage.
Good timing. The portal's creating a lot of lift right now.
Blaze is getting antsy, too. Aren't you, boy? Aren't you, boy?
All right. Let's mount up.
So, you're off now, huh? It's been such an honor to head this thing up with you. Your courage and your commitment really made a difference around here, and the castle's better for it. But it's time for you to soar.
It's been a blast flying with you, Kalita. The castle won't be the same without you. Look after Blaze.
You won't be a stranger, right?
Sheree is going to do a phenomenal job. I just know it. And I'll come back and visit sometime. And we'll all get together and climb on Blaze's back and just tear off into the sky.
Good luck. Take care of yourself, okay?
Okay. Let's go, Blaze. Peace, y'all.